Papa achieved agriam, best of all, gatim, the destination, yogeshvara ashritam, the place occupied by great mystic yogis. Somadati, the son of Somadatta. Tu, but. Sumati, a son named Sumati. Tatputra, the son of him, Sumati. Janamejaya, was named Janamejaya. Ete, all of them. Vaishala Bhupala, the kings in the dynasty of Vaishala. Trinabindo Yashadara, continued the fame of King Trinabindu. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The son of Krishasva was Somadatta, who performed Ashvamedha sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet, to which the great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All these kings appeared in the dynasty of Vishala, properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabindu. Please repeat. The son of Krishasva was Somadatta, who performed Ashvamedha sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet to which the great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All these kings appearing in the dynasty of Vishala, properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabindu. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 2nd chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu. Om Agana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmaye Shri Gurve Nama Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Garamayam Dadati Svapanandayam Vanchakalpa Trubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyavaisnava Namo Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasvi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, we are in the less desirable situation here where there's no purports. Somehow or other we're supposed to speak, even though the acharyas chose not to. So, here, the most notable thing beyond the succession of different kings in this great line of important kings in this world, finally come to Omadatta, who perform great sacrifices and satisfy Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So Krishna gives a clear indication in the Bhagavad Gita that this is the process for living in this world. If we study human society, the families, the individuals, we see that for the most part, everyone is constantly making sacrifices for others. They sacrifice for their husbands or wives. They sacrifice for their children, family members. Some sacrifice for their circle of society. And some even sacrifice for their country. I know there's a saying that there's no greater sacrifice than to sacrifice one's life for his country. Very popular in the armed forces, the army, for people to say that when someone dies in the line of duty, they say that he's made the greatest sacrifice for his country. But here, Somadatta didn't sacrifice for his country, nor even his family. But he's talking about offering sacrifice and satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that some yogis perfectly worship, in text 25, some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some of them offer sacrifices in the fire of Supreme Brahman. And also it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the whole race of human beings was created and set out upon their social obligations, their life, and said to be happy by sacrifice. But that sacrifice is meant for, as Somadatta did here, for Vishnu. But actually, that is what sacrifice means, to sacrifice for the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And one of the names for Vishnu is actually known as Yajna, or sacrifice, the Lord of Sacrifice, or Yogeshwara, the one who is the actual enjoyer of the sacrifices. So we can see that sacrifice means that you give up something. You may give up, as it says, you may give up your all different varieties of sacrifices come under two primary divisions: sacrifice of worldly possessions and the sacrifice in the pursuit of transcendental knowledge. So Prabhupada says in the purport in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 25, that those who are in the Krishna consciousness, who are in Krishna consciousness, sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy the demigods such as Indra and the sun god, etc. Others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of the personal Brahman. So these demigods, they're powerful living beings, and they're appointed to particular posts by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as within the government of any country, you have different posts for the management of the government. So those who approach them for particular material benefits, which they are duty-bound to provide for society, these demigods, they are trying to get some material benefit by their sacrifices, some personal benefit. They want some attention. Prabhupada sometimes compares that to a bribe. You want, sometimes it's said that in certain countries, if you want justice, you need to have money. You need to be able to bribe the judges so that they will decide in your favor. So approaching the demigods is this kind of bribe that you're providing for everyone, but consider me special. Fulfill my needs. Maybe even above and beyond what you are appointed to do. I want some special consideration. So people who are fruit of in their mentality, they're sacrificing for their own material enjoyment. And impersonalists, they sacrifice their different materialistic conceptions of themselves for the purpose of merging into the Supreme. But as Prabhupada says, the Krishna conscious person, like Arjuna, however, sacrifices everything for the satisfaction of Krishna. Thus all his material possessions, as well as his own self, everything is sacrificed for Krishna. Thus he is the first class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence. So we can see there is a history throughout the Bhagavatam of kings and great certainly persons who are making sacrifices to please Vishnu. Sometimes they make sacrifices where they're trying to get some return. But for the most part, those who are most exemplary, they perform sacrifices with no anticipation of any personal benefit. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that by these sacrifices you'll get everything you need in this material world. And then what else? The fringe benefit. The best part. In the end, you'll come back to me. You don't have to remain here and struggle in this material world, continuing trying to manipulate the energy and get a little protection from all the adverse effects of material energy, or to get a little special benefit so you have a little advantage, perhaps more than you were karmically expected to get. So, Krishna conscious person is, by definition, a person who is conscious of Krishna. He's conscious that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and his friend. So, if you have a very dear friend who's very powerful, very wealthy, do you need to bribe him in order to get some benefit from him? If he's your friend, it would be an insult to bribe him, isn't it? If you were going to want some benefit from your friendship, you would naturally get a benefit. That's what friends do. They help each other. They take care. They consider each other's needs and they reciprocate according to their ability. And if you bribe him, I'll give you this, now you give me something more back, then that would be considered not to be a real, true friend. So, this bribery, as Prabhupada calls it, is not our method, not the method for devotees. Rather, we're respectful of government, respectful of the demigods, and they will treat us with fairness. Sometimes adverse things do fall into our lives, and we may feel dissatisfied or uncomfortable with them. But a devotee tries to learn how to tolerate all these things. as Krishna advises in the second chapter, he advises Arjuna, Matra spashas tu konte asitoshna sukadukada agama pino nitas tam tiktishvatra ambarata. That this happiness and distress, they're coming and going. You're trying to get happiness and avoid distress, but they're constantly changing. One day happiness, next day distress. Just like winter and summer. Now it's summer, so we don't have the extra cold of the winter. We have the heat. The heat is nice, but it can get too much, especially for those who have to cook. Like I heard, our new deity kitchen is a bit hot because it doesn't have sufficient air ventilation. Well, they're trying to fix that, but the point is, cooking, Prabhupada says in the purport, that cooking in the summer, one has to tolerate the heat and the cold. In the winter, you have to take bath, even though it is cold. As I remember, when I was brand new bhakta, I understood that you were not supposed to use warm water when you took a shower. So I had a cold, a terrible head cold developing, and I was taking this icy cold showers. That didn't help. But I took it that's what devotee's supposed to do. He's supposed to tolerate the cold. Now, not meant for an extreme like that, but we have to tolerate what comes naturally. It's like there was one lady calling us in the office. I've been talking to her over a period of several weeks now. And she's in some adverse situation. Somehow she was studying in college, just about one semester or two semesters from getting her degree to go into the medical field. And some controversy came, and they were going to expel her from the college without finishing her degree. So she was greatly disturbed that she would have to so close and not be allowed to finish. And she's been disturbed because they haven't considered or reconsidered her case now for several weeks and months. And so she's in anxiety, what to do. Even apply to other schools and have to start over three more years of school instead of 4 months. So great anxiety, and she's telling me, it's like, why is Krishna doing this to me? Krishna knows I want to serve him. Why is he putting me through so much difficulty? Doesn't he want me to just to finish up? What is he doing? So time and time again, I have to explain to her that it isn't necessarily Krishna's putting you in adversity, putting you in difficulty. It's coming by your own previous activities, current or previous lifetimes. And you have to tolerate them and keep on worshiping Krishna. We don't expect that Krishna has to fix every one of our karmic reversals, every one of our difficulties. And we will have them. It's guaranteed. Whether one lives in a $1 million house or he lives in a little shack, there's going to be problems. There's going to be adversities. There's going to be things to tolerate. So by sacrifice and worshiping the Supreme Lord, we go beyond our current situation. We say, I'll take whatever I have and I'll offer it to Krishna for his pleasure. And Krishna is not a cold-hearted person. Although the gopis do accuse him sometimes of being cold-hearted, because they want to know, what is Krishna's heart? What is Krishna feeling in his heart of hearts? Does he really love us? Why is he torturing us by not allowing us to fully reciprocate with his and with our loving feelings? So does Krishna really love us in his heart of hearts? Does he really feel our love and reciprocate? And the answer is yes, he does. In fact, the one duty, if Krishna is said to have any duties, that he feels most important, primary above all else, is to take care of his devotees. to see that his devotees are on a good path. They're being taken care of. Now, in our limited view, sometimes we think that that means my material situation will go very perfectly. And I will have no problems, no reversal, no disease, no economic struggles. No pain, no suffering. But where are we? We've chosen to be here in this material world, which is called Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, temporary and full of miseries. Three main kinds of miseries are always with us. Miseries of our own body and mind, miseries due to material nature, and miseries coming from other living entities. We can't avoid, these are the rules by which this whole environment is governed, and we cannot expect that we'll be exempted from them. Although they may be minimized, we won't be exempted because this is how this world operates, always giving us pains. Like sometimes people worship Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, and she's there with a trident, sticking the living entity, poking him and piercing him with this trident, delivering him different miseries. So people who worship her think that they will come, they'll give her a little exemption. No, not me. But there are no exemptions except for devotees. But what is the devotee's exemption? Not that he will not suffer, but at the end of this life, he will not return to this temporary world full of miseries, birth and death. He'll get a permanent exemption. So in the 10th canto, it says we have to just go on tolerating these difficulties, reversals, and it becomes our rightful inheritance, our rightful guarantee to get Krishna's eternal service in Goloka at the end of this life. By that toleration, we earn that right. So that toleration also definitely includes sacrifice. And there's one example in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's in this first canto, where it talks about King Yudhisthira. Yes, in the first canto, chapter 12, where King Yudhisthira, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, and you can picture this Battle of Kurukshetra. It was a war based on Dharma, the codes of religion. What was correct, and what Krishna wanted. Krishna told Arjuna, you fight because I have ordered you, not for any other purpose. So they fought the whole war just on Krishna's order and for righteous purposes. Still, so many people died. So many people died. Millions. And being a very soft-hearted individual, devotee of the Lord, Yudhisthira felt responsible. Now I'm sitting on the throne, he's thinking, and 640 million people had to die for me to get here. I have some responsibility. I have some weight on my shoulder for all this. Whether Krishna ordered or not, he still feels that weight. So he wanted to perform a sacrifice to please Krishna, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada describes that one should take lessons from the acts of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was afraid of sins committed on the battlefield, and therefore he wanted to satisfy the Supreme Authority. This indicates that unintentional sins are also committed in our daily occupational discharge of duties. And to counteract even such unintentional crimes, one must perform sacrifices as they are recommended in the revealed scriptures. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yagnartha Karmano Yatra Loko Yam Karma Bandana. One must perform sacrifices recommended in the scriptures in order to get rid of commitments of all unauthorized work or even unintentional crimes which we commit. By doing so, one shall be freed from all kinds of sin. And those who do not do so, but they work for their self-interest or sense gratification, they have to undergo all kinds of tribulations accrued from committed sins. Therefore, the main purpose of performing sacrifices is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. The process of performing sacrifices may be different in terms of times and places and persons, but the aim of such sacrifices is one and the same at all times, in all circumstances, which is the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord Hari. So he says, this is the way of pious life. This is the way of peace and prosperity in the world at large. And Maharaj Yudhisthira did all these things as a pious king of the world. So nowadays, we hear about the president asking us to sacrifice for the country, for the greater good, for society. We hear about leaders asking these sacrifices, but we don't see that they are sacrificing to satisfy the Supreme Lord for their own benefit and the benefit of society. We don't see that. So the pious nature, we may say, is missing. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was in this position, and his treasury, his wealth, was depleted from this great war. So in those days, the sacrifice they performed, very costly. They had to have so much gold. I know we had, for our installation of the deities, we didn't have so much gold, but we had a lot of ghee and a lot of element, different ingredients. Why, even the honey alone we use costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars. What to speak of the ghee? I was just looking at the boga expenses yesterday for the temple. And just the boga expenses for the festival ran nearly $10,000. So we spent a lot. Of course, we fed a lot of Vaishnavas. But such celebration is not cheap, very costly. And many persons participated and helped us with this sacrifice. So now we have the wonderful appearance of Sri Sri Krishna Balaram. Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai! So to please the Lord, one has to make sacrifices, and then he reciprocates. So it's said that in this Kali Yuga, we try our best to perform some installation according to the, or different sacrifices according to the direction of scriptures. But even in those performances, there was one section called Prayaschitta, where we're asking forgiveness for all our discrepancies in the installation process. Everything we did incorrectly, we forgot, whatever impurities may have been there. So in this Kali Yuga, the mass of people are untrained how to do these sacrifices. They have no idea. They don't even know what sacrifice is. The best they can understand that the ultimate sacrifice is give up your life. But for who? For your country? Just like in every great war, so many millions of people die. They were doing some historical account, and one man who, in World War II, he came in with the army to Normandy, where the Allied forces landed to begin to push back the German army and their reign over so many countries, so many people. So from the time he landed at Normandy to 6 months later, he had a division of troops that he was with, 120 people. 6 months later, there was only two of them still alive and fighting. So many people sacrificed for their country. But to sacrifice for Krishna, which is even greater, Krishna makes it so much easier. And I think some of us may already know what is the methodology, in fact we all know in this age, that's most successful, most recommended, is described in the 11th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. In this age of Kali, intelligent person perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself, and he is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. So, to save all the people of this age, Lord Chaitanya propounded and encouraged us to take up this Sankirtan movement or Sankirtan Yajna for very practical purposes. And the people of this age were strongly recommended to follow this method of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's very important that not when we perform it as devotees, we are getting some result, but we're performing also to improve the lives of the general populace, to give them an opportunity to hear Krishna's name, to allow them to have a change in their karmic path, so that now they are becoming qualified to approach Krishna. This Agyata Sukriti, they don't even know what they're hearing. They hear the holy name of Krishna. Now many of us, those who were not born in the movement, we had some moment in our life when we first heard the name of Krishna and first met the devotees, saw the chanting, heard the chanting, maybe even participated in the chanting. And we can know that from that point forward our life changed, whether perceptibly or imperceptibly, but our life changed because of that contact with the devotees and the holy name. So this is the sacrifice which changes everything in this material world. And it puts everyone on this path, quickly or slowly, on this path back to Godhead. So it's so important, so valuable. It's the highest priority. So we can see that in our installation ceremony, we did for 2 days, just as Prabhupada said at the Krishna Balaram installation in Vrindavan, what was the main factor that was constantly going on? There was Harinam Kirtan, right? From beginning to the end. We may even note, I don't know accurately or not, but that even at the end of each day, there was a good amount of rain came. And Prabhupada noted in Hyderabad, devotees came and performed Sankirtan, and there had been a drought for some time. And after performing, the rain came. Prabhupada said, yes, this is due to this Sankirtan Yajna. So, this is everything I had to speak about today. Probably a lot more than was in this verse, but he tried to connect it. And I welcome you all to give any comments or corrections, additions to this whole discussion. Yes, Matani.
You were mentioning about the person who was saying, why is Krishna doing this to me? And maybe I'm just cynical, but it seems that a lot of times when people go through difficulties, very rarely is it because of something that just happens, like a lightning bolt hitting you or something, or a hurricane, or, you know, usually when we go through difficulties, there's something that we did or didn't do, and now we're in the soup. And we pray, Krishna, get me out of it. you know? And when he doesn't get us out of it, then we say, why is Krishna doing this to me? But it seems like when we're children, like sometimes we may do something wrong and we say, you know, we realize we made a mistake and mom or dad will come and they'll get us out of it, even though by, you know, logic we should suffer. And sometimes the parents will let us take the consequences. So my question is it right that even when we do something that we ought not to have done or don't do something that we ought to have done and we're taking the consequences, is it okay or is it ever okay to expect Krishna to get us out of it? Or should we take our punishment and say, this is my reaction and maybe I'll learn something out of it?
Well, certainly one has to pray whatever position they're in. Sometimes it's difficult to pray in the mood of a pure devotee when you don't feel that mood in your heart. But at the same time, we should know that Krishna is not vindictive. Sometimes other religions, they portray God as being vindictive, angry God, punishing God. Krishna doesn't punish like that, Krishna, but he wants us. But what does he want? He doesn't want anything except that we come back to him. But sometimes we're very attached to things and enjoyments of this material world. So it's like when a little child, somehow finds a bag of candy. I don't know, sometimes mother may have that problem. Kid finds the bag of candy. And one candy isn't enough. He keeps eating and eating and eating. And the mother knows, I gotta get this away from him. It's not good, he's not gonna be healthy, he's gonna get sick. And the child will complain. He'll cry and make a big fuss. But somehow the mother knows, for his benefit, for his ultimate good, I have to take this away from him, even though he thinks it's going to make him happy, so that he'll remain ultimately healthy. That's one understanding. And sometimes I relate also a personal experience I had as a young devotee, and that was when I first joined the movement, I had a unique opportunity. The person I was working with was a devotee. I didn't know it at the time, but gradually by his association and his encouragement and his preaching, I became a devotee of Krishna. And then after about a year or so, he moved on to another position, a different company. I couldn't understand why this should happen, but I was very upset. Because now I had to practice Krishna consciousness without the association of devotee all day long. And it was difficult. Now suddenly I was facing material energy and I had to figure out how to live as a devotee and deal with all the difficulties and all the challenges. And so it was extremely disturbing to me. And I was praying constantly to Krishna, why am I in this situation? Why am I being challenged like this? And one day, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore. And so I just took a break from my office. I walked outside and I just took my japa beads and I was just chanting and chanting and chanting, praying to Krishna, why? Just tell me why I'm supposed to be here and doing this. I know I'm supposed to be here, but why? And suddenly I saw, and it was middle of downtown Detroit, all full of concrete and buildings, so somehow there was a little tree in the middle of the concrete. Well, they had planted it there, but it was only maybe 6-7 feet tall. In that tree there was a bird's nest, and there was birds in there, and then somehow one of the baby birds gotten out of the nest and was hopping along the sidewalk. I saw that whole thing happen. The bird fell out and was hopping along the sidewalk, and he's struggling and struggling, and then after a few minutes he started flying. And so suddenly it dawned on me, you may call it a realization, that Krishna was teaching me how to stand on my own two feet and be a devotee, in spite of all the challenges and difficulties that we face, and we will face, we all do. So we want that protected atmosphere, but we have to be able to withstand the onslaughts, the challenges of material nature. And Krishna will be there, but we have to become strong to do so. So sometimes we're put in adverse situations and we have to learn something. We have to grow, we have to improve, we have to become stronger. Just like sometimes you see those, you buy in the store these little bamboo plants, and that they're going this way, the branches are turned this way and that way into some kind of designs. Well, how do they do that? They train those branches as they're growing to go in a particular direction. They don't grow naturally like that. And when it's grown for some time, you see, oh wow, this is amazing, looks amazing, quite incredible how they did this. But it takes training. So that's another part of it. And the training is that we have to tolerate everything in the material world and get out. Not tolerate it and stay here, but tolerate and get out. So we have to be able to become strong enough to do that. And as Prabhupada says, we have to fly our own airplane. You may be flying an airplane, but no one else can help you when you're flying that airplane. You have to be able to fly on your own. So sometimes that's a lesson. Sometimes that's a purpose. If it is, then Krishna is doing it in a friendly, nice, supportive way. Not punishing us, but training us, helping us, strengthening us, teaching us how to grow. I'm sorry, I hope that answered your question. One last question.
In relation to this question, I think that a lot of people, especially many religions, encourage people to pray for a particular resolution to a particular problem. But devotees have this much broader vision. They see the ultimate problem that I'm here in the material world and I have to get out. And therefore they take full shelter of Krishna because they see that the solution to their problem is the next stage of their life in the spiritual world, away from all of this nonsense, or at least absorbed in Krishna's pastimes in the material world. So they see an opportunity much greater than what most people are preaching. They're preaching that you pray to God for the resolution of your, you know, no job or bad job or, you know, circumstances. And the conclusion that you came to from your situation is very good. Actually, it's very practical that we have ultimately, our ultimate problem is to get shy of the material world, rejoin Krishna and participate in his loving pastimes. And not just to resolve our little, our temporary difficulties. The temporary difficulties always be with us. And a devotee can kind of become callous to those problems, and therefore he always takes shelter of Krishna and he always resolves all of his problems in that way.
That's very true. And another thing I've noticed, especially in my life, is that we think there should be one solution to our problem, but we have such a small, tiny vision. When Krishna fixes a problem, he fixes many problems at the same time. He doesn't just fix one problem. And we have so many things in our heart that need help, need to be fixed. Not just some external thing, but inside. So I think it's getting late. Thank you, everyone, for coming to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.